is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Morning. You're on the clock with Erin Green. Today is Wednesday, the 5th of May, 2021, and you're tuned into Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We're also streaming live audio and video on guardiantalkradio.com. You can listen in on TV on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 or Flow Channel 612. Or you can download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices. And listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. Text us on the Guardian Radio text line, 422-4796. That's powered by BTC, standard text rate supply. Or call us at 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259 to join the conversation. Today's show is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. Well, good morning, Bahamas. I want you to forgive me if I sound a little hungover. You ever had a dilly hangover? You ever eat so much dilly that your sugar rush up and you felt like you was drunk? Well, thanks to the tree raccoons that was in my raccoon tree, my dilly tree last night, I was able to have a wonderful birthday. Look here, these raccoons drop dilly for me. The biggest dilly I ever seen come out of my tree. They saved it for me and they dropped it for me. So, first of all, I want to say thank you to my birthday raccoon. Second of all, I want to apologize for any disparaging remarks I would have made about raccoons and all other vermins in the yard. Because just because they're annoying to me doesn't mean that they don't have a purpose on this planet, right? They don't have a function in my backyard. Now, technically, I still don't think they have a function in my backyard. Maybe somebody else's backyard, right? But I am happy that they exist. And I would like to say thank you to everybody who helped me celebrate my birthday yesterday. It wasn't no birthday fruit, but I know y'all are sharing the love with other people who you know need it, right? And that was the point, right? Like, the point was what I was trying to share yesterday is sort of two things. Like, in these difficult and struggling and times, right? First of all, we have to figure out how to celebrate ourselves, how to find joy, you know, in small moments. And, you know, the things that look small sometimes could be the biggest things, but also not, you know, to figure out how to sort of contain ourselves and not demand too much of others around us. What I mean by that is, like, the people who love you, they want you to feel loved all the time. And sometimes they extend themselves beyond where they could go in an attempt to show you that love, right? And sometimes you guys show them, it's just be like, baby, you just being here is enough. Like, sweet girl, my lovely niece, you just telling me happy birthday is enough, right? You just asking me if I want to share the Vitamol that you already sucked down and put a little backwash in, because you know I don't want it. But just the thought that you asked me, my little nephew, is enough to make me smile, right? And sometimes we have to sort of govern ourselves and moderate our emotions and our expectations and create an environment where people could give what they could give, right? These things are important. Also, this is a little bit late. I want to say this thing for a moment. I want to say to the older Bahamian woman that I encountered on Sunday morning, and I use that experience, you know, as my intro to talk about some. I just want to say, look here, I hope I didn't cause you too much, like, unnecessary pain or discomfort, right? Like, I want to use the moment to talk about something, but it wasn't about embarrassing you or making you feel shame. I could be honest, in the moment, I hope that you heard it and got a sense of what it was I was saying. Because I'm not really saying that you a bad guy, you know, or a bad mom or nothing like that. But that, you know, sometimes we got to moderate our behavior. And it was more about me remembering to moderate my own behavior, right? And I'm not casting blame on you, because look here, mom, you've been living a long time and you've been through a lot. And I sure there's plenty of people who still deserve a pinch from you, and you ain't get to pinch them yet. So, yeah, I wanted to say that. I wanted to use that experience, but I still have to practice, right? We have to find ways where we can teach something without embarrassing or unduly discomforting somebody else, even if they could have been wrong. She could have been wrong. She's a little bullyish, but we understand. Well, also in the news today, I think it's a great idea if you get a chance to check out the article by Alicia Wallace in the Tribune. It's entitled, "We Cannot Understand Sexual Violence Until We Understand the Issues." And so I just want to make this quick point. A friend of mine was making a statement this week on social media that may have objectified the person that they were talking about. And they were referencing how this particular woman, a woman in public life, looked good in her jeans. And it's a little rude. It was tongue-in-cheek. It was part of a bigger critique, right, on political behavior. But there it was, sitting in the middle of social media. And then today the gentleman came back and he sort of made an apology, you know, and he made the point to say, look, it's important for men to not objectify women. Right? I think that's important. It's also important, I add in this, it's also important for people to not objectify people, right? Because men are also objectified by women and other men in a sexual way. But there was this response, somebody responded to the conversation, and they felt that, you know, a part of this problem is that women don't understand what a compliment is. Right? And that sometimes we women get upset for no reason when somebody's trying to give us a compliment. Now, I could be honest with you. It was my birthday yesterday. And I put on my tight jeans. Right? Because I'm the president of the Tight Pants Club. But see, the Tight Pants Club is where we understand that self-esteem and self-confidence, right, are tied into sense of self and identity. And so when we feel like we look good, we feel good about ourselves. So if a woman want to put on a pair of tight pants to feel good about herself, I support that. And you should support that too, because it's about her and her sense of self, right? So I got no problem with that. I put on my tight pants yesterday. I wasn't begging for compliments. I wasn't looking for compliments or things, right? I lost a little weight. I was looking a little sleekish, and I put on my pants. It made me feel good, right? And that's why I did it. Did I get any compliments yesterday? Not about my tight pants, right? But I got plenty of birthday thing. But I didn't really put it on looking for compliments, right? I put it on because I liked how I looked and felt in the clothes. So I wanted to say this thing today. There is a thin line between complimenting and objectifying a person. It's a very thin line. And see, because here's what it is. Why are you complimenting the person? Are you complimenting them because you want them to know something? You want them to know that you think that they look good today. Right? Well, that's about you. It's about what you want to do and what you think will make somebody else feel better. Right? See, this is that thin line. That person then becomes the object of your feelings, right? Because it's really about you. You want to tell them. This will make you feel good about yourself. But you don't really have any idea what state they're in, what they're feeling in that moment. You don't even know if your compliment will make them feel good, if it will make them feel valued, or if it'll even make them feel safe or unsafe, right? See, like this thing of giving a compliment is really about us. It's about us having an experience and an emotion. And that's when the objectifying part comes in, because you sort of using them for you to have this experience. And the question is, does it really have anything to do with them? But here's the next thing I think is more important for us, as important for us to consider. What is the value of a compliment if it creates a less safe environment for the person you're complimenting or other people generally? Right? Like, this is really what it is. What is the value of the compliment if it makes the person feel less safe? Right? Now, that could be perceived or real, right? But what if it creates a less safe environment for other people? Now, I use the word people because I want it to be gender neutral, because men in this town are objectified as well, sexually objectified as well. And I don't want us to forget that we have this little problem where adult women objectify teenage young men, right? The graduation and the prom pictures and the sports pictures. We see the conversations on social media. That's also not appropriate. So initially, you know, I wanted to keep it gender neutral, but let's segue into this part here. When you compliment a woman in a public space, while you, a gentleman, may have self-control, spatial awareness, right? And even a degree of mindfulness. And you are complimenting a woman out loud, maybe from a distance. There are other people in the space that may see you engage her and see her respond to you. And she may even respond to you in a positive way, right? Appreciating the compliment with a smile. Another man may come into that same space, a little less cultured than you are, a little less attuned, right? Like in tune with what is appropriate in that particular space at that time, and say something that is inappropriate or makes her feel uncomfortable. And when she doesn't respond to him in the way that she responded to you, he may get upset and wonder, what is wrong with me? Why are you treating me different than you treated him? That's one of the ways you can create a less safe environment. When you compliment a woman and she doesn't respond, and then you turn around a full 180 degree and say something nasty to her in response, you are creating a less safe environment for her. Right? That's what we mean when we say there's a thin line between complimenting and objectifying a person. I want us to think about these things, because let's not pretend like sexual violence is not a problem in our country. And Ms. Wallace talks about consent, right? And our lack of understanding of consent. Let's not act as if we don't know that we have a problem with consent, understanding it, practicing it. It's a thing you practice, right? This consent thing is a big deal. And we can see manifestations of our dysfunction around the subject across our nation. At the political level, where our politicians and our government officials keep suggesting to us that the mere act of electing them is giving them consent to do whatever they feel is appropriate without consulting us at the right time, right? Now, let's mirror that with the discussion on marital rape, right? Where we say that once you get married, you've given me consent to do whatever I want to do without consulting you, even if it's the right time. Right? We see that. I see it. Maybe I'm still a little dilly drunk. I could still be a little dilly drunk. But we also see it in our parenting, in the way that we engage in power dynamics, right? Where I am in charge, I cook the meal, eat what I say, eat. As opposed to having a conversation with our children that sort of goes like this. Now look here, you know, money-wise, we may be struggling. We ain't the richest people. So the choices we have in terms of food are limited. But here's what you as a young person can do to have more of the food that you want to eat in the house. We have to figure out a way for you to balance school and part-time work. Or we need a garden so we could grow some food and you could trade and barter what you grow to purchase the things that you absolutely want. See, that's sort of how consent works, right? You let them know what the circumstance is, what the options are. Because a lot of these young children, if you tell them that, they will buck up and they will figure out to find some part-time work. They can find somebody to help clean their yard or collect bottle or do something. But this consent thing is very, very important. You know how I know it's important? Because this is at the crux of the vaccine hesitation. Right? People are concerned about mandatory vaccines. Because the question is, at what point do I no longer have the right to consent to this medical treatment? That's what people are concerned about. This consent thing and our feelings around it impact almost everything we do in this country. Now, I can move very quickly with this, but this is the last thing. You see that traffic thing right there? Our dysfunction on the roads? It's about consent. People ignoring the right of way. If you have a stop sign, that means you have to wait until either the way is clear or someone consents to you coming out in front of them. See, but y'all don't like that concept of consent. Ain't nobody could tell me when I could come out this corner. Not even the stop sign. Ain't nobody could tell me when I could come out of this intersection. Not even the red light. But see, here's the thing. Ain't nobody could consent to let you run a red light. Ain't nobody could let you run the red light. And ain't nobody could let you run the stop sign. You can't consent to that. Right? The same way a 15-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 13-year-old, a 12-year-old, an 11-year-old, they cannot give consent to sexual intercourse. Right? So you have the car. You could press the gas. You could go through the stop sign. The person could stop the car, obstruct traffic, and let you out, right? But they can't consent to it, right? You ran the stop sign. They didn't give you permission to run it. You ran it, and you knew you were running it, and you knew the risk you were taking when you were running it. See, we got to talk about these things. They impact us at every level of life in this country. Every level. Even last night, I had to stop and ask the raccoon, you mean to drop that big dilly for me? Because look here, the one thing you want to do, don't mess with no raccoon. Get consent before you mess with a raccoon. They are not playing. And maybe that's the lesson we need, right? If you don't understand consent, go talk to a raccoon. But that dilly, you will soon understand consent. But listen, good morning. Here's what we're going to do. Arlington, let's go to that break. When we come back from that break, I'm going to read these texts. Thank you this morning. I see a lot of texts. I'm going to read these texts. And then I'm going to introduce my guests. And we're going to talk about freedom of information. I want to know why you don't want to tell me how many mango trees you have in your yard. Surely you have a national duty to make that information public. We'll be right back, everyone. You're tuned in to 96.9 FM. This is On the Clock with Erin Green. Stay tuned.
Meet Jackie. Jackie's a hard worker with a steady income, but she has a personal loan and multiple credit cards to pay off. keep her account current, Jackie opted for a loan from Fidelity Bank to consolidate her debt into one monthly payment and earn interest on a built-in savings account. Be like Jackie. Call 356-7764 to book a complimentary financial coaching session. Fidelity also offers virtual assistance. Fidelity, we're good for you.
Have an outstanding real property tax bill? Take advantage of our real property tax forgiveness program. Bring your account to zero and receive a 50% discount on your outstanding tax and surcharge past 180 days. Or get a payment plan. Make a 25% deposit on your outstanding tax, receive a 100% waiver on the surcharge, and pay the difference within 36 months, interest-free. Contact the Department of Inland Revenue at 225-5778 or email us at rptforgive@bahamas.gov.bs. Offer ends May 31st.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Well, good yawning this morning. You're tuning in to 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Erin Green. Today is Wednesday, the 5th of May, 2021, and I have a short ad for you. The census goes digital. During the months of April to July, the Department of Statistics will be conducting a listing exercise to build a database to support the first ever national census data collection via a digital and online process. The listing exercise will include all building and dwellings in New Providence, Grand Bahama, and the Family Islands, and will be listed by enumeration district. This message was brought to you by the Department of Statistics. Good morning. Well, first of all, I want to introduce my guest this morning, Mr. Matt Aubrey from the Organization for Responsible Government.
Thanks so much for having me, and a belated happy birthday.
Well, thank you.
I owe you a dilly.
Yes, indeed, you do owe me a dilly. I've had my fill of sour tamarind, right? But there's no such thing, because tamarind is a liver conditioner, right? So we should always get a piece of tamarind, right? And here's a beautiful thing about tamarind, people. When you shell it and freeze it, they could last for a very long time, right? So I like to shell mine in larger packages for resale, right, and for use in the off-season, but in smaller packages for personal use, right? So like once every 2 weeks, I pull out a couple of plugs of tamarind and munch on them for little liver conditioning.
But I agree. I can't have a limit on either Gnep or Dilly. Those two, there's no limit. If you can find them, eat them.
Yeah. Although mango is my favorite. Let's get to these texts, Matt, before we get into our conversation about freedom of information. This text says, how do you contaminate a propane plant with contaminated diesel? We are paying attention. The things you see when you're sitting in the dilly tree. Thank you very much, Texter. Unfortunately, I spent my whole minute and 30 seconds for the month of pettiness. You get 1 minute and 30 seconds for your birthday, and I spent it all yesterday. But yes, BPL, we see you. But also, maybe what we need is a private sector body that can attempt to provide, when I say oversight, but to monitor, right, simultaneously what's going on at BPL so that we are better informed and better able to engage the corporation and the ministry responsible for the corporation when issues do arise, right? Because rumors, they're entertaining, but they don't have much weight. But a civil society or a private sector organization that focuses on following the industry, right, could not only provide information for people who are concerned about issues, but could assist the industry by creating a space for discourse about advancements and development in the industry, right? See, everything ain't always about just critiquing and beating up on people. It's about building mechanisms to support the work that you're already doing. Another text. Lady Green, man, the producer ain't send your number for me to send you birthday top up. Well, I have your number, so I can send you my number for the birthday top up. But first of all, let me ask you a question. Like, that's a beautiful gift, you know. But here's what we could do with that birthday top up. is a young person, like a young woman or a young man in your community right now that is struggling with their transportation needs, right? So they may need top up on their phone so they could call somebody reliable and who they trust for a ride while the public transportation system is still diminished, right? It's because we don't want our young men and our young women getting rides from unsavory characters who would take advantage of them. And we don't think about it with young men, right? But sometimes it's, look here, I need you, we catching a ride home, I need to stop at this bar, I need you to go inside and buy this and pick up and tell them this for Johnny. This time somebody slipped a couple packages or something inside the bag, it ain't supposed to be inside the bag, right? We don't.
The other thing would be for seniors. This time when we're dealing with social distancing, a lot of folks have been kept inside and don't have access to their families. So some minutes might make a difference in terms of their well-being.
But look here, look at that. Absolutely. If you know an older person who is distant from their family but could use WhatsApp to stay in contact and the little data, that's where we need to send that top up. I want to thank you so much, Texter. I'm going to get your number. Because if you send that top up, if you send it to me, I can send it to somebody, and then I get something to send to you. It's sweet. It's probably named Dilly. Another text. Hi, is the site down? I'm getting a pop-up flywheel. Arlington, somebody's asking if the online site is down. The producers are going to check on that. Thank you very much for that message. Good morning. Three straight FNM, FNM. That's only two FNM you leave in this message, though. Don't forget the third one. That's my my FNM texter.
I see.
I love them. You are right. There's a lot of sexual abuse in gay communities. They target people who are not homosexual, et cetera, et cetera. Well, see, you make that point. Let's talk about that. We have a culture of sexual predation in this town. And what that means is that people tend to engage people they think are weaker or less sophisticated than them for sexual intimacy, right? So what you'll find is like adult men who can't read or feel, they don't have any confidence, right? Because their reading isn't up to an adult standard, or they feel like they're not working a job that's suitable for a man, right? They have low self-esteem. And so they engage these young high school girls because they think that they can impress them, or they think that older women will not be impressed by their stature in life, right? And so they tend to trend towards these young girls, and some women do it with young boys. Some gay people do it as well. Predation on people who are not children, but are significantly younger than them. 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, even. Right? We have a serious culture of predation, preying on people. You see someone in a sort of a down and out position financially, and you feel like, oh, well, maybe, you know, I could buy a couple little things and we could have a sexual relationship. It's a culture of predation, and gay people are guilty of it too. Ms. Green, I just want to commend you as an exemplary Bahamian. You're a great talk show host as well. Keep up the good work. Boy, look here, I was going to wear my T-shirt today that say, hard worker, bad employee, right? I want to say, first of all, thank you. But I have to say this. There are so many people that every day, just doing their regular thing, are the examples that we should be turning to. Like Juan said the other day, some of us has just come on here and key and talk foolishness. Like yesterday, I talk a whole bunch of foolishness for my birthday, right? But thank you, and I take that on as a challenge to continue to attempt to model the behavior that I know we all need at this time. Thank you very much, Texter. Well, Matt, good morning.
Good morning.
So let's get to this conversation.
Surely.
On Monday, the Attorney General's office released a statement announcing or introducing the first Freedom of Information Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner, and announcing the opening of the Freedom of Information Office. For people like yourself and working with an organization like ORG, who have been following this work for over 10 years, I'm sure you are excited about this move.
It's a major step forward. Just to quickly backtrack, the Organization for Responsible Governance actually was founded after the first VAT initiative, where the private sector, the chamber, numbers of groups of civil society came together and put together a model that changed the mindset of, well, we can put forward a VAT of 15% to, well, we're going to do something that's more like 7.5%. And a lot of that information was taken by government in determining what we went forward. But the policies were also recommended because when you were now putting in a new level of taxation, you also, best practices, have mechanisms for the citizenry to ensure that that money is being used for its intended purpose, which was to pay down debt. So you needed freedom of information. You needed fiscal responsibility. You needed financial management and planning, some of the legislation that we've been talked about most recently. So we were started with that mandate to see how this legislation is passed. In the time from then to now, we worked with a coalition of, I think, about 22 different civil society and private sector groups that came together calling for the passage of it and then working in consultation with the group that had been put together by government to inform the legislation. And so when it was passed, it was a celebratory moment. The time between that and now has been quite extensive, and so there have been a number we've spoken out frequently, and there have been other groups that have spoken out about the need for it. And so to see this move forward is critical. When the legislation was passed, much of it was not enacted. And to date, only a few points have been enacted. One was to retract the prior bill that never saw light of day. And the second was to put in a whistleblower's component that is, in theory, supposed to support folks from government who have information that might need to come forward, that if they can't be recriminated against. But the third was the ability to hire an information commissioner. And that step is significant because it meant that once that person is in place, a lot of the protocols, the procedures, the systems that actually will put the legislation into practical use will now be able to be sorted out. So for us, this really indicates a major step forward that now much of the other components of the bill have the potential of becoming enacted and in a relatively short period of time.
All right. I see I got a caller on the line. Let's get to this caller. Caller, you're on the clock, and we're talking freedom of information.
And I guess I got 30 seconds.
Unless the information is hot, Sparky.
Let me tell you how hard it is. Yesterday was one day I was so angry with you. Because you was there talking with me. It was your birthday yesterday.
Yes, sir.
And it was my 70th birthday yesterday, so it was my birthday before your birthday.
That's right, and how could I do that?
I'm 70 years, and you talk and talk and talk all day by yourself and wouldn't give me a chance to call in to tell you it was my birthday. So I have good reason to be mad with you.
That's look here, and if you find me this weekend, I got two dilly for you.
I got a whole bowl of dilly right on my kitchen counter with some bananas and all kind of things that people bring around my house yesterday. Because, boy, that was a small get-together, but it was a fun time.
Good.
Everybody's food gone, was full with, they had a crash. Everybody, so much pictures, it crashed.
Nice.
70 years of pictures. I want to thank everybody that wished me the good wishes yesterday. Thank you, everybody. I just love you all. The Commonwealth of the Bahamas, the leader of the official opposition, Mr. Brave Davis, for passing by and eyeballing me and shaking my hand and congratulating me. Everybody that passed around yesterday here in Sparky and Friday State, my neighbors, everybody, I just want to say thanks. Let me ask you this question.
Yes, sir.
Before we go into freedom of information.
Yes, sir.
Am I correct to say that the person inside your studio or your guest is a white Bahamian? I asked this for one reason. Is that a white Bahamian?
No, sir. I'm married to a Bahamian. My wife is raised here in Nassau. Her father's from Long Island. They're majors.
Oh, I was just saying if you were Bahamian or a foreigner, just listening. Because I was going to say, how come the white Bahamians, if they're on the radio, they sound different from the black Bahamians? And we all on the same island, 21/7. White Bahamians told them on Wolf Road, Camp Road.
It's culture and genetics.
But how come, what I'm saying is, do they have the island set up in a certain way that there's enough space for the white people to live and the rest of the black people live on the other side?
Boy, look here, Sparky.
We don't see them down East Street.
Sparky,
we don't see them nowhere in the bottom.
You can't get into that today, man, Sparky. Let me tell you why, right? Because it's sort of like culture and genetics. It's like where you live. Because if you ask, Sparky, if you ask the average Bahamian, right, about Erin Green, they can say that bougie woman who went to QC. They know right away I go into QC, right? And some people get upset that I be on the radio talking in Bahamian dialect. Not because they think Bahamian dialect is substandard, you know, but because they know it's not my first language, right? Like, they know the way that I was raised. I speak Bahamian dialect as if it's a second language. And they sometimes feel like I'm putting on airs. So it ain't just the white people, right? It's about class. It's about the environment that you're in. It's about the media that you immerse yourself in, right? Because you speak how you, what you hear. You mimic what you hear. And you sort of speak how you write, right? How you hear it in your head when you're writing it.
Well, sir, I would say, first off, thank you so much for the compliment, because if I sound any kind of Bahamian, that's a step forward, because I would reflect a father who's black from New Orleans and a mother who's white from New Mexico and some Native American in there, and that's where my language comes from. So if it sounds at least slightly Bahamian, then I feel like I've started to arrive. I appreciate it.
Right. And once you don't go to the Montague Ram talking about, could I have two conks, please? I need two conks right now. Then you could be fine.
Yeah, we'll be all right.
But it's an interesting discussion on culture, right? And one of the questions I have later on is about culture. But let's get back to this discussion. And let me say, happy birthday, Sparky.
Happy belated.
You're absolutely right. I do feel bad because you're 70. You're a senior man to me. And if anybody should have been celebrating day by day with me, it should have been you. Let's get back to this discussion. So, the opening of the FOI office, this is a big thing. But let's take one step back.
Mm-hmm.
The whistleblower portion of the bill has been passed.
It's been enacted. And it's important to understand what that means, right? So
yeah.
It's been acted, which means that in theory, that dynamic is in place. So that information should be shared if it is required to be shared. And no one in government should fear recrimination if they do share what is legally bound to be able to be shared. However, there are not the mechanisms in place at this point to understand how you would tap in to get those resources, you know, hotline numbers, a process around that. And so the office and what ultimately will come as the full regulations and protocols related to this will also hopefully address that and be very specific. And when we talk about freedom of information, I think it's important also just understand what that means. It first off does not mean that now everybody has access to your personal information. That is not what this is, right? Freedom of information, or in some places it's called right to information or access to information laws, speak to the fact that they recognize the right of the citizens to have access to information, not all information, but a substantial amount of information that the government uses or holds in its efforts and its actions. So that means that there may be financial information about how the government has determined a budget, or scientific information about an environmental area, or health information in a particular geographic area that citizens can access when they have an interest in finding something out. So when we look at the law, this law is actually seen to be a pretty strong law. There is a Global Right to Information Index. And when it assesses, it looks at strictly the law and how it's been used, the Bahamas actually comes out, its law comes out pretty high. Out of a potential score of 150, we have about 103 score.
Okay.
And in context, you look at a place like Trinidad or Jamaica, they have a score about 89. But I think the difference in one way to recognize, though, is it's kind of like if you see a shiny new car on the car floor, right?
Yeah.
On the showroom floor. So you look at it, it's beautiful, it's great, but it hadn't been driven yet. So I think we also have to see what this looks like when it actually rolls out. And all of that is now going to be potentially possible with the opening of this office, because now we're talking about boots on the ground. It's really not about potentially just having a law on the books, but it's how is that law going to be rolled out, how our procedure is going to be measured against the usability, right, so that citizens can actually feel like they use it and understand it. How will it be promoted? How will it be supported? And more importantly, when the instance comes forward, how will it act independently of government to represent the rights of the citizen?
That is a lot. So this thing won't, okay, Freedom of Information Act and the office, right? Mm-hmm. We talk about what freedom of information is, but this office and how it functions, it won't really function unless somebody comes in and says, hey.
Well, the way that the law speaks to the fact that the way you're supposed to be able to access information is you're able to go to any part of government. Every ministry, every department, every entity that is covered under this law is supposed to have an information officer, somebody who's in charge of receiving your request, which in the law it says has to be in writing, and it has to be relatively clear so that government knows what you're talking about, right?
So I hunt Chick Johnny's.
Right.
And I know that between the National Trust, right, and the Ministry of Agriculture, they have thousands of documentations that I could use to prove that the Chick Johnny exists.
So you might need to say, I want to know how many Chick Johnny's between a period of time and only on Andrus. You want to understand,
to
like,
as specific,
right, as possible so that they can be able to bring that information back. But once that's done, that information officer at each of those points has the capacity to fulfill your request or tell you this is not information we can share because of a number of exemptions that do exist in the law. And the power of the information commissioner is that you as a citizen might be able to say, hey, you can't tell me how many Chick Charneys there are, but I don't believe that that's legally what you owe me the information on Chick Charneys. So you can bring that request to the information commissioner, who is to be objectively and independently making an assessment should Aaron get the information on,
right,
Chick Charneys, so because the law says that's viable.
So in my letter, I need to clearly point out, I think these people in the office lying, because her cousin from Andrus, and they're trying to start a Chick Charney business too. And so I need more information.
I don't know that they'll come into the intent of why,
yeah,
but they'll say legally this is what we have. But it is to be understood that there are limits, right? There is information that we won't be able to access. Some of it is related to the government's relationship with other countries, with other entities. Some of it is business information that if that was used, it would give an unfair advantage to one group or another. Some might be environmentally protected information. So where all the Chick Charneys live, we may not want to give that out because all of a sudden everybody starts looking at the Chick Charneys or a group or breeding grounds, right? Mm-hmm. That's information. We don't want that to be available. So there is a determination. And then there's a component in the law that talks about a test of whether that interest, that information is valuable in the public interest to be shared. And it's that language which really has to be better defined, because that discretion could really mean the difference between you getting information that may be valuable or important for what you're trying to achieve versus the same old model of government won't share information because it's government's information. And that's not the intent of this law. So part of it is we have to get the car out of the showroom and start to drive it around and figure out how does this thing work here in the Bahamas, rather than what might work in Trinidad or what might work in the States or Canada. And making a law adapted and enacted in our local context and culture is going to be important.
All right, so I get another question. I have not read the FOI, Freedom of Information Act, yet. And here's why. Forget that I'm a little procrastinating and lazy, but it's difficult to access, right? Sometimes it's difficult to,
sure,
find these laws and bills online. And even when you access it, it's sort of difficult to understand what it is you're reading and to ensure that, mm-hmm, you are understanding it, and not just what the actual legislation says, but that you are reading the correct thing,
right,
at the way that it's been uploaded into the digital database.
Mm-hmm.
So does the act speak to how information should be published?
So the difference between a Freedom of Information Act and what you're talking about is a move towards a very more modern sense of government, where you have more open government and information is shared, presented out, versus having to be demand driven, right? So that if you ask, it will be provided versus, okay, we're just going to provide this information. One of the interesting dynamics is that as countries have Freedom of Information Acts, more information then is just presented publicly. It's not that model. And you got to, again, understand where the culture, we've talked about culture a few times today, right? Where the culture of this comes from. There is still a model that government information is to be held as sacrosanct, right?
Right.
It has to be kept in a way that, you know, the Official Secrets Act and all of the things that go into that. So now we're turning the corner towards a different mindset, a model where the citizen has a critical role in ensuring that government achieves what it's supposed to do. That the citizen participation, and research shows this too, citizen participation at a broader level, not just a small group of folks, but that all different folks in the family islands and our different communities and seniors and youth being involved actually improves our democracy. It improves our government efficiency. It improves our economic competitiveness. It improves our social situation. So this is an opportunity we have to be able to move forward. But first, we need to understand what it is so we can actually get involved.
Absolutely. Arlington, let's see what this caller is saying on the line, and then we could talk about, let me get to this caller, we could talk about what's involved.
Mm-hmm.
Caller, you're on the clock.
Yeah, and happy birthday to you.
Why, thank you very much.
And don't
forget, good morning.
Oh, good morning. Yeah, what is it? But see, what happened, I was rushing because, you know, you have time to go in.
Yeah,
good morning to you, good morning to your guests, and happy birthday to you and Baki. But I have a quick question on the Freedom of Information Bill, because a lot of you don't realize that not just for politics purposes, it's a transcript right in. They have to write a movie about this what's going on now in this election, put a movie on it someday. Would we have access to it, some of the materials online?
That's
my quick question. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think what's been interesting is even without the law being enacted, you've seen more exchange and availability of information from government. If you just taking an example, what the Ministry of Finance has done related to the budget information is different than what you would have seen 5, 6 years ago, 7 years ago. You're starting to see more disclosure. So information that would be available. But the determination of what won't be shared, I mean, cabinet deliberations won't be shared, those types of things. So it is knowing what you want and how then to access it. You may go to one part of government and then they say, well, you know what, that's not information we hold. When you make a request in the law, they have 30 days to respond. So you would make that request.
But if
you're going to the wrong part of government, they can move it over to another part of government, and that 30 days starts again.
What you said, executive information would not be shared.
It's not as clear as just executive information, but information that's used in the deliberations of cabinet absolutely is not there.
When I say executive, that means cabinet information.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, have a good day.
You too. Thank you.
I see we got another caller on the clock. Let's get to that caller quickly. Good morning. You're on the clock.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi. Evan Green.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. We pronounce FOI, FOIA. The act is called FOIA.
Okay.
Now, is that retroactive? Can we go back and see what the former government did or how much they paid for them? And if some files we see is for 10 years, 50 years, or whatever, but can we go to a judge and have a judge release that for you?
So the freedom.
Thank you, caller.
The Freedom of Information Act. It's not retroactive. It's you have access to the information that government has now. There are exempt areas, however. So areas that have confidential information between the Bahamas and a foreign government, I mentioned that. Things that would prejudice Bahamian security or defense, Law enforcement records can be exempt if they endanger somebody's life or safety, or if something would affect a pending prosecution or facilitate an escape from detention. So there's going to be a number of components. And then there's others that are legally privileged documents already, and they'd be exempt. So some records that might affect the national economy, or as we talked about, cabinet deliberations or records that reveal any, you know, commercial advantage. So this information is now held exempt. However, the law recognizes that in 30 years, once information has been kept, it can then become available. So when you look at where that 30 years starts, I think that does start with the beginning of the legislation. So we're already 4 years into that going forward. But accessing past information, if the government holds it and it doesn't fall within any of those exempt categories, in theory, should be available to you as a citizen.
So here's a couple of things. That 30 years, right? Here's what I'm thinking. You see former President Trump?
Yes.
There's an interesting discussion of how he became president of the United States of America, right? Considering that he has both a confidential informant file and a counterintelligence file with various U.S. agencies. And somebody suggested that the reason he got so far in this journey is because the people who are responsible for those files are now dead or retired and no longer in those agencies. And so that information, right, and the things that were redacted and things you can't see in the file are no longer accessible because the people who hold that information are no longer part of the agency or alive. This 30 years seems like a whole lot of time.
When you look at when we did our consultation, we recommended that it be a shorter period of time, 10 or 15 years was part of the civil society recommendations. Because that again, you want information that's important and as you need to access it. When you look at other pieces of legislation, it's not that outstanding, as a number. But I think to your other point, what's also important to make this law important and meaningful is that we would know how to utilize it.
Yeah.
So I think there has to be we heard that the office is going to take 3 to 6 months before it's functioning. And the assumption is that means that they're organizing, training those information officers, setting up the digital systems to transfer information, building the mechanisms. They'll be working with consultants who help them to do this. But in the same time, we need to prepare our citizenry. We need to let people know what is freedom of information, what is it, what it isn't, right? What it's not everything, but also how to utilize it so that we can be very specific. One group that's working right now on the environmental issues is very interested in freedom of information and looking at how you can use that information to understand the impact of some of the environmental, some of the larger developments and their impact on our natural resources and natural spaces. And so they need to know how and where and what we should be going to ask for so that they can get the appropriate information which can support their advocacy or as they do their research to identify that, you know what, this could kill coral or this could reduce the potential of an endemic species. And that information is not something you can just walk into any office and say, give me this. You're going to have to be a little more specific. You're going to need to know who has it, where to get it, and then how to, once it comes through, be able to understand the context of that information. And that requires training for all of us.
We're going to need to understand how government collates and stores information, how it's labeled. We need to be able to identify the name of the document that you're looking for so that they can actually literally find it, right, if it exists.
And we also see the real value just as you spoke to, this whole legislation is really on the user. It's on the citizen that wants information. That could be businesses that want to be more competitive when they apply for government contracts.
Or like, I want to know whether they changed the name of San Salvador to Cat Island and why. This ain't just a rumor. This is one of them things we gotta answer. Yeah, yeah.
So within that information, we need to make sure that this the system does work for us too. So there's a process of consultation that should happen. So some back and forth between who needs this information, who's going to use it, the media that will access it, because the media is a very frequent users of these types of laws in most jurisdictions. How did they need this information? What's the best way to access it? So that can be also put forward to the information commissioner and help to adapt what we come to a most functional mechanism.
Matt, we're almost out of time, mm-hmm. right? But what you're just saying is that, look, the user is the most important part of this process in terms of it working and the purpose of the system.
Right.
The state obviously will have an education campaign to teach people how to use the system. Will ORG or any other civil society organization be doing this?
So the Organization for Responsible Governance, and you can check us out at orgbahamas.com, will be holding sessions. We need a little bit of more information on the process and the procedure, and we've reached out to the AG and the Information Commissioner already to see how can we partner. But we're looking to do sessions at the end of this month that will be virtual, so folks can learn more about freedom of information and how they can use it and how it can be valuable, not just to hold government accountable, but also to improve our circumstances.
Right, so that I could figure out whether I could start a mango industry because I have an inventory of all the mangoes that are available in country through existing already producing trees. Right? Something
absolutely,
like that.
Absolutely.
Non-nefarious.
No.
Just my political and belly agenda.
But and the final component I think that comes from it, in addition to economic opportunity, is it's also freedom of information and access to information. It helps to dispel some of the mistrust that folks have in government.
Yeah.
And that leads to people not getting involved. That leads to people throwing up their hands and saying, things aren't ever going to change. This is one step forward to say that actually the responsibility and the resources can be in our citizens' hands to take a step forward and be more active citizens.
Yes,
and this
sir.
Is something we really want to encourage because it makes a huge difference in the potential future we might have, being more sustainable, more positive, more vibrant.
Right. And I want to say to the government, let's get the system up and running. Help us to help you, because all we want to do is to help you to help us. Anyway, thank you for joining me,
Matt. Thanks for having me.
This conversation is not over, because next we're going to talk about how we shift the culture of appreciation around transparency, honesty, and freedom of information.
Anytime.
Thanks for joining me. Thanks for joining me, Bahamas. I'm running a little late. That means Levon Miller and Unleashed is up next. So stay tuned to 96.9 FM and Guardian Talk Radio. Have a great day, Bahamas.